Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami.
One of the things that the Buddha does is take something that is quite ordinary and has us use it as a basis of our reflection, investigation, of our practice. And certainly the experience of dukkha is it's something really ordinary. Dukkha being that experience of stress or discontent or dissatisfaction of suffering. It is just something that is extremely ordinary. And when the Buddha defines what dukkha is, birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, sickness is dukkha, death is dukkha, not getting what one wants is dukkha, having to be associated with what one dislikes is dukkha. It's that feeling of, you know, it's so ordinary. The way that the mind focuses on grasping and clinging is dukkha. And it's this experience of the body and the mind not being as we would like it, whether it's the internal world, the external world, is never quite as we want it, like it, feel it should be. And there's that experience of the feeling of unsatisfactoriness, dis-ease. And, you know, this kind of ubiquitous experience of that kind of discontent. And of course, you know, it's ordinary. It's I wouldn't say normal, but it's ordinary. But what the Buddha also points to is the fact that there's causes for that feeling, for that experience. It doesn't just sort of arise out of nowhere. It isn't as if it's completely pervasive, has to be that way. It arises out of causes. And, you know, even though something is kind of pervasive, when we understand the causes, then we can do something about it. And of course, that's what the Buddha is encouraging. He isn't encouraging us to acquiesce to suffering. What he's encouraging us to pay attention to is the fact that when we experience that quality of stress or suffering or dis-ease, that we have to learn what its cause is. It's like when we experience some kind of, like eating something that disagrees with us, upsets our stomach, makes us feel uncomfortable, is actually learning how to pay attention to what it is. And you know, do we keep doing that? Obviously not. Or if we do, then we have to recognize that experience of suffering is our own, it's our own doing. So that you know, learning to recognize these patterns of of cause and effect. There are these causes and conditions, and they result in a different experience. And if we want to experience suffering and dis-ease, then those are the causes that we can keep putting in. Or if we want to experience something different, we want to experience well-being, we want to experience happiness, we want to experience peace, then we have to put in different causes. When the Buddha points to these Four Noble Truths, they're structured in terms of there's an effect and there's its cause, and goes for the both pairs in a sense. There is the First Noble Truth of suffering, and then there is the cause of suffering. Then there's the Third Noble Truth of the cessation of suffering, the ending of suffering, of peace and liberation, and there is the cause, or the practice leading to the ending of suffering. So that there's an effect, a condition, and there's its appropriate cause. So that recognizing that this is the pattern that the Buddha points to of these different ways that our life can manifest, and there's the associated causes and conditions. And that the Buddha's teaching is always pointing to seeing clearly, understanding what those conditions actually are, and making skillful choices. And really, the practice of cultivation of mindfulness, cultivation of the meditation, of developing a stillness and clarity of heart, is giving us the tools for being able to discern what those patterns are, what those causes and conditions are, in order to be able to make more effective choices, making wise choices. And that's why in the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha points to each one has its appropriate duty or responsibility, or the appropriate reaction to it. And the word that the Buddha uses is gicca, or it's sort of like the responsibility toward it. With dukkha, its associated responsibility or response is it should be understood. It should be known clearly. So that that directing attention to knowing it, seeing it clearly, understanding it, and being able to, when we understand something clearly, know it clearly, then we're able to see more clearly where it comes from, what its conditioning factors are, and understanding the causes. The causes of dukkha, the associated response or responsibility to it, is that it should be relinquished, it should be let go of. So when the Buddha points to the causes of dukkha, he's pointing to different aspects of desire, different aspects of clinging, so that desire, the wish, to be gratification, that sensual gratification, getting pleasure. And the way that we oftentimes respond to something pleasant, of course, is that we want it, we want more of it, we want to sustain it. But the Buddha is always encouraging us to investigate in terms of causal conditions and causal processes. The natural tendency for most of us is to look in terms of this is pleasant, therefore I want it. This is unpleasant, therefore I want to get rid of it. And again, a sense of looking at things in terms of processes, so that when the Buddha looks at something that's pleasant, he looks at it as a causal process. So there's that which is pleasant, that's the cause for the arising of that which is more has a pleasant result. But then there's things that are pleasant that are the cause for the unpleasant to arise. And it's not that difficult to figure out. And the same with unpleasant. You know, it isn't as if everything unpleasant, it just goes on and on endlessly unpleasant. So that which is unpleasant can be the cause for the arising of what is pleasant or useful or beneficial. But it can also be the cause for, let's say, more unpleasant. It's like something that is unpleasant, say you get angry, and the anger itself is unpleasant, then you say things or do things that increase conflict and difficulty, and it just increases the unpleasant, increases the difficulty. But say something that's unpleasant can also be a condition for what is pleasant. It's like with sometimes, yes, even just sitting in meditation, the feeling can be, there can be unpleasant sensation, there can be the bit of impatience, but then it can be the cause for cultivating a bit of restraint or reflection, investigation, and then it sows the seeds for what is pleasant or beneficial. And you know, the opposite is true in terms of, or similarly, with the pleasant. You know, if we get caught up in what is pleasant, or we just get forgetful, heedless, because of what is pleasant, then it's easy for it to just flip over very quickly into something that's not beneficial, not useful. But then something that's pleasant can also be the cause for that which is more useful, more beneficial, more pleasant. A good example, the opposite of anger, but loving kindness. You establish loving kindness in the heart. It's pleasant in the moment. It sows the seeds of really wholesome and skillful tendencies in the mind, and it results in an increased experience of well-being and clarity. But these are, you know, understanding things on the causal level, the causal process. So the response that we have to that experience of dukkha, it's important to pay attention to that. How do we understand or know clearly that experience of dukkha? How do we relinquish and let go of the different types of desire, clinging, attachment that we do form? And it isn't a judgment of it in the sense, oh, this is bad, I've got to get rid of it, because that in itself is one of the desires that the Buddha pointed to. That is a cause for more dukkha, is that vibhavatana, not that desire for non-becoming, the non-being, shouldn't be this way, don't want it, pushing away. That pushing away is in itself sowing the seeds for more dukkha, because it tends to be done out of delusion or the desire for being, becoming. I've got to become, it's like Ajahn Sumedho would always sort of say, you know, one of the great delusions of us as meditators and practitioners is we've got to say, I've got to become peaceful so I can be a good Buddhist, I've got to become a good meditator so I can be a good practitioner, I've got to become wise so I can get rid of my suffering. And it's always this becoming. It's always going into the future, and it isn't really paying attention to the present, to the experience itself. It's a constant building up of more causes for dukkha rather than a shedding and relinquishing. So as practitioners, learning how to pay attention to these processes, these causal processes, and the experience of the cessation of dukkha, and then its attendant cause. And again, what the Buddha says, that cessation of suffering, cessation of dukkha, has to be realized. And so this is something that we pay attention to. How do we realize, how do we actualize cessation of dukkha? Are we just sort of waiting around for it to manifest magically somehow? Sort of like Beckett's Waiting for Godot, and he's sort of waiting, waiting and waiting. Somehow it should be manifesting. Or do we actively apply investigation and experimenting with realizing it? Because it isn't as if we experience dukkha all the time, that life is just unremitting, endless dukkha. Yeah. I may feel like that sometimes, but that isn't what reality is. And we have to draw attention to realizing that experience of non-dukkha, of cessation of dukkha, and seeing, well, where does that... Because it comes in glimpses, even in ordinary circumstances. And then starting to realize, oh, well, then, say, when the mind isn't swept up in some kind of obsession, what's the feeling? And you realize, well, that experience of cessation of dukkha, yeah, I mean, it has a cause. And it's something that is accessible if we pay attention to it. Then we can cultivate the causes and attention that allows us to start to highlight that, allow it to arise, allow it to establish itself. And then what the Buddha points to is, say, the cause of the path leading to cessation of dukkha is the Eightfold Path, and that needs to be cultivated, developed, brought into being. And, you know, there's many, many things that we do. You know, we think we're doing the right thing. Say we think we're okay, we're reading Buddhist books, going into meditation halls, and we must be practicing Buddhism. But it's not necessarily it has to be applied appropriately, properly, with the proper causes coming in. You know, there's all sorts of things that, of course, these days you can find anything on the internet. So that from time to time you come across these great little bits of information of things that you've been doing wrong, assuming that it's right. It's like eating a banana, or peeling a banana. I mean, it doesn't matter how you eat it, but like peeling a banana. And I don't even like bananas. But most people, if you're given a banana, you take a banana, try to peel it, and you take it from where the stem is, and you grab that because that's where you can grab onto it better, and you try you. And it usually makes a mess of it. But it's actually, you should really peel it from the other end, at the smaller end. And you grab that one, and you just pinch it there, and you pull it down, and it comes over. It's just not... Every time, you don't miss, it doesn't make a mess, it doesn't do anything, it just comes off. And sort of these ordinary things that we tend to do because we assume, just because we've been doing it like that. And apparently, that's how monkeys do banana. That's how monkeys peel their bananas. And these are experts. And they're... that's how we meditate in the sense of we tend to do it the way we think about it or do it out of habit or do it. It's good to pay attention to the experts, just something simple like that. Learning how to just not to assume that we've. Say we're doing it right because it's the way we always did it, or we thought it was a good thing. So that's similarly with our experience in just ordinary circumstances. You get something that is desirable, so you follow through with it with desire, get caught up into it, and you say, well, actually, it's never really brought. Peace, and so that okay. How do we establish a different relationship? And this is where the Buddha is saying, desire should be relinquished rather than followed. Those practices of restraint, of mindfulness, of investigation, those should be brought into being, and. Made much of, they should be given attention. It's that tendency to hope that just by wishful thinking or something that we're actually going to be peaceful and wise. And you have to really understand the causal processes. And that's where those teachings of the Buddha are so important. And then learning how these causes and conditions actually work, paying attention to how that causal process is functioning all the time. And that's it, realizing that, all of our actions, they have a result, and they have a result over time. It's like the image that the Buddha uses of the tracks of a cart. When a wheel of a cart goes down a track, say the wheel's only this big, but the tracks go on and on and on and on for a long period of time, or a long stretch of distance. And our actions are similar. You think, well, it's not such a big thing to say this or to do this or feel this even. Not such a big thing. But it's like that the wheel of the cart where the wheel isn't that big, but then those tracks go on for a long stretch of time. And the same thing happens in our own life. Learning how to recognize there is that effect, there is that result, and do we really want that? Because for some actions, you want those effects to go on for a long time. It's like with generosity or kindness; those effects, they have wide-reaching effects. They affect us. They affect others. And you think, I really want to. Pay attention to that, or the ability to be patient or to be discerning when we make those choices. Those effects have a real long reaching. It extends out in time. It's a really wholesome thing, but some aren't, and we have to have the clarity to discern. That's just the very nature of the nature of action or of karma. Of course, what the Buddha is pointing to is also the to have the, in the same way that the Four Noble Truths are set up, there's dukkha, the cause of dukkha, the cessation of dukkha, path leading to cessation of dukkha, suffering, cause of suffering, cessation of suffering, path leading to cessation of suffering. And the Buddha also uses, in some discourses, uses that same formula with karma. There is karma, there's the cause of karma, there's the cessation of karma, path leading to cessation of karma. And of course, it's basically the same thing. When we understand actions and their results, and that their effect. And of course, the Buddha using dukkha is pointing to the effect, but also recognize, this karma, it's our actions that is is kind of the key thing. And that's because also when the Buddha defines karma, he's pointing to volition. It's that volitional action, that the intention, the impulse behind the action, that is the defining feature of karma. It isn't that, there are all sorts of actions, but a karmic potency is from the volition behind it. And that's also, why Ajahn Chah, his primary encouragement in keeping moral precepts, keeping virtuous conduct, was in order to facilitate an understanding of the impulse behind, the volition behind. So we understand karma. So that using these Four Noble Truths that point to cause and condition, the causal processes, the effects that arise from that, so that we have a greater understanding, and then we can make the choices that really bring benefit for ourselves and bring benefit to others. That's kind of the definition of wisdom could be or discernment can be the understanding of the nature of our actions and its results. It's also its opposite is what the definition of insanity is. Doing the same thing over and over again, thinking you're going to get a different result. By training and cultivating, so that we can really understand, if we want something different out of our life, in the sense that we want peace, we want happiness, we want wisdom, then what kind of causes do we need to put in? What kind of actions do we have to employ? What's the strategy? Yeah, if you don't have a plan, then life is just going to pull you along, and your habits and your conditioning are just going to pull you along, and that's when we think, that's what practice, so meditation, it's a cultivation. Is to be able to implement some clarity in recognizing what is it, what kinds of causes and conditions do I want to put into my life to result in something that's really beneficial. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.